In this episode of the On.NET Show, we're going to have Philip Carter joining us again, and he's going to tell us all about building web applications with the F# programming language. Hi, my name is Cecil Phillip, and welcome to another episode of the On.NET Show. And today I have with me Philip Carter. How are you doing, Philip?
Hey, how's it going? I'm doing pretty well.
Doing pretty good, man. So you're here today to talk to us a little bit about F#, and not only just F#, but F# web development, right?
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Last time I was here, I talked a little bit about some of the new stuff that's coming along for F#, like language-wise, and showed some of the stuff in the tools, specifically for Visual Studio. But there's a lot more than just F# inside of Visual Studio.
Right.
And in particular, F# on .NET Core has a lot of options for doing web-based programming, especially for web APIs. And I personally think it's a really great fit for that. So I wanted to go over some of the different options that you have available.
Sure, sounds pretty good. And you had some slides too that you want us to take a look
at. Yeah, absolutely. There's numerous options for web programming with F# and .NET Core. Like you can even just do a console app that has HTTP listener and just listens on a port or something like that. But yeah. There's sort of five main ones, I think. There's ASP.NET Core MVC, mm-hmm. which any C# ASP.NET programmer should understand already, basically.
Right.
There's Giraffe, which is sort of like, so ASP.NET Core is like more of a low-level thing, and yep. MVC is a framework on top of it. Mm-hmm. Well, Giraffe is like a functional library on top of that lower-level thing. So
okay.
It's very similar to MVC, but it's functional instead of object-oriented.
Okay.
And it's actually derived from Suave, which I'll talk about as well, which is Suave is something that came before all of this. Saturn is another option. It's a relatively new one. And it's actually built on top of Giraffe. And basically, Giraffe is more kind of a lightweight, you know, build only what you need sort of thing, whereas yep. Saturn is like, okay, we got batteries included, we got all sorts of different stuff for you if you want a bit more of an opinionated way to do things.
Great. So it sounds like pretty much based on whatever your programming style is or whatever your particular need happens to be, mm-hmm. I could just say, hey, give me like this little lightweight thing that I could use to build my application, or hey, maybe I need some more pieces, I need scaffolding, I need database migrations and some of these other things, that I can pick another framework mm-hmm. that will have those things already wired up for me. So it makes it a little bit easier for me to get going.
Exactly. And then we have Suave, which I mentioned before. It's been around for quite a while, and it has a particular syntax to building your API routes that was actually used by Giraffe. And so I'll show kind of what that looks like.
Okay.
And then there's Freya, which is a really interesting one. That's it's a purely functional web framework, so mm-hmm. it's well, more functional, if
more
you will. It uses some more advanced concepts to sort of model the HTTP abstraction pipeline sort of stuff. And so, like, if you want to get really functional, Freya is the one for you. So I kind of want to go through each of these a little bit and sort of just talk, like which one you might want to choose and that sort of stuff.
All right, cool. So which one do you want to talk about first?
Yeah, so we got good old ASP.NET Core MVC.
Mm-hmm.
So it's in the box with VS 2017 and the .NET Core SDK. You just type .NET new at the command line, it's already there. There's a few options there available.
Right.
It's fundamentally an object-oriented programming framework. So if you're interested in learning functional programming, doing this is not necessarily your way to learn functional programming. However, if you want to have functional programming put on top of something that you're already familiar with, in particular, if you're a C# and object-oriented programmer, then this might actually be a really good option for you. Because you can wire up APIs exactly the same way that you would do it in C#.
Right.
And then you can connect that to like a functional library, just like a core thing that executes all of your logic, and then it just calls into stuff that you're already familiar with.
I think a good thing with that, too, is that if I'm already a ASP.NET Core, .NET, C# developer, I could always look at some of the things that I'm used to doing.
Yeah,
and I could look at it in the F# way of doing it, and it kind of helps me translate back and forth between the two, right?
Yeah,
so I'm not necessarily worried about, hey, let me learn this API per se. I'm also now thinking about like how do I translate between different languages if I wanted to learn how what's the F# way of doing things.
Exactly, that's kind of the way that I look at it. And like F# fundamentally, it has all the object-oriented features that you want, but it is a functional first language. So we basically say, hey, object-oriented is great. For solving particular problems. Functional is great for solving particular problems. Mm-hmm. We have a set of defaults in the language that are meant for functional programming, but you can opt into object-oriented programming depending on the situation. And cool. So one of those situations might be, I'm a C-sharp ASP.NET developer, I know OO, I'm interested in functional, but I don't know what it's all about. Let me apply some stuff that I know so I can get something going, and then just kind of slowly start to learn functional to the point where maybe I could even transition away from the OO stuff if I feel like that makes sense to me.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So for the F-sharp and MVC stuff, are there templates already available for Visual Studio and Visual Studio Code that can help me get started with?
Absolutely. And how about I swipe on over and show you what it looks like?
Let's do it.
So I've put up File New Project already because I'm terrible with mousepad, and I'm just gonna, like, it's gonna be embarrassing if I try to select this menu.
Sure.
You'll notice under the Visual F-sharp node here, there's a thing called web, there's a thing called .NET Core. You'll be able to see that in either of those two places. There's ASP.NET Core web application. So we'll call this fun times because we're having a fun time. And I blew up the font on Visual Studio, so this in particular looks funny. but I have .NET Core 2.1 installed on my machine.
Okay.
I'm not going to enable Docker support because I don't have it running. But I could enable that as well. All that would do is just scaffold like a Docker Compose file and a Docker YAML file and things like that. So anyways, you got that nice little start page. It's going to restore some packages like any old .NET core thing. We have basically three files here that should be the most familiar. There's program.fs, which hopefully you know what that does. Startup.fs, where we'll do a little bit of work. This is very similar to the C-sharp startup .cs, except it's written in F-sharp. And
sure.
You know, there's this configure services, configure member overloads, that sort of stuff. That's all, it's the same thing, just written in F-sharp. And then we have this values controller, which is just our values. So you'll notice in this get, we have this static array of values, and then we have this other get that has this value. Let's do something a little bit better and try to factor this out, treat this values thing as if it were like a database or something.
Okay.
We'll pretend that it's a database because that's for fun times. So I'm just going to go to add new item. We'll go source file, call this item service.
Item service sounds good.
Yeah. Name doesn't matter too much. I'm just going to make this a namespace. So we have the difference between F-sharp is we have modules and namespaces.
Okay.
Modules are kind of more for communicating things between F-sharp sources, right? Like they're fundamentally just like namespaces. They're for holding code, organizing code, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
They can also hold values, whereas namespaces cannot.
Cool.
So I'm just going with a namespace right now because I generally like to have top-level namespaces instead of top-level modules, but it's you can do whatever you want, really. So the way that ASP.NET works is if you want to do something, you basically got to use dependency injection, like if you want to do it the right way, right?
Mm-hmm.
So let's teach you how to do it the right way, but just in F-sharp instead of C-sharp, right? So we know we're going to have to need an interface and then something that implements that interface.
Yeah.
So let's start with the interface. We'll call that iValuesService, okay? And this is a type. This is like there's no interface keyword. This is just a type.
Sure.
And I'll go member get all values. And I'm not going to actually write like the body of this thing. I'm just going to say this is from unit to string array, right? Because if we look at this is in this values controller here, we have an array of strings, so we want to just have a string array there.
Right. So my C-sharp brain, as I'm looking at this, what I'm seeing is that you've defined an interface, and I have some function called getAllValues that takes no parameters but returns an array of strings,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Okay,
int, and this will be a string. Oh, right, I need to go abstract because I'm inside of an interface. Because I'm live coding, I'm just forgetting on the fly. So here we have an interface. If I hover over the tooltip in here, you can see this is type iValuesService, mm-hmm. and it has two members, an abstract member. This is, you know, get all values, given a unit, which is nothing. That's the same thing as void.
Yeah.
Give me a string array. Mm-hmm. And then there's get value, which given an int, give me a string, which matches what value controller is doing here. Given an int, give me a string. So let's go ahead and implement this interface. So we'll just call it ValuesService. Okay, and so to implement it, I'm going to have to go interface iValueService with. And notice how I did this double underscore thing. I could go this dot, I could go x dot, I could name it whatever I want. That's if I want to refer to the actual this, I need to give it a name. But because I'm not going to do that, I can just go with the double underscore, which is basically a way of saying, hey, this is a member, it's defined on this type, but I don't really care what the name of it is because I don't need to access something on myself.
Got it.
So we'll go get all values. And that's right, we need an actual set of values. So we'll just take this out.
We'll just borrow some values from the other one.
Exactly. This is our values database, which I don't know if you would actually want to do that in real code, but you know. Okay, so.
So now is values database now I guess a field or a property?
Yeah, well, so this is just a let-bound value inside of a class. So we have these let bindings, which are very similar to just, you know, hey, here, well, similar to var, except they're immutable. Mm-hmm. But they can also be defined inside of classes. And when they're defined inside of classes, they're private. So I'm not going to be able to access this outside. Like when I've instantiated a value service, I'm not going to be able to go dot valuesDB. Yeah. This is just hidden by default. So this is just like a nice convenience
For how you could scope some of your values.
Exactly. It's similar to a field. And so you notice I still have a compiler error because I haven't implemented get value. So I'm going to go ahead and do that. And get value takes in an int. So we'll call that index, and we'll give it a type annotation of int, which is actually optional, but I'm choosing to do that anyways.
Okay.
So we'll take values. So basically, depending on what's passed in, we may not necessarily have a guarantee that this is going to exist inside of this database.
Sure.
So we want to be able to deal with the fact that that might not exist, mm-hmm. but still be able to handle it gracefully.
Okay.
So I'll go let results equal valuesDB, and I'm going to use this pipe operator. This is similar to like PowerShell pipes or Unix pipes. I'm going to pipe this into a function. And this function is going to be called array.tryItem. Mm-hmm. And I'm just going to pass in index as my index. And so if you hover over try item, tries to find the nth element in the array, returns none if index is negative or if the input array does not contain enough elements.
Yep.
Right? So if I hover over result, you'll see that it's not a string, but it's a string option. Right? But the signature of get value is a string. So I need to find a way to convert this string option into a string.
Yeah.
Well, this is where the magic of F sharp starts to appear. I'm now forced to deal with the fact that I may not actually have what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
Right? So I can do pattern matching, and I can have this sum value. I'm basically saying if result is a sum, meaning there's something there, there's actually a value, then we'll just return that value. But if it doesn't exist, I need to do something with that. Oh, no. Means we didn't have it. So now I'm fully implementing iValueService. But I've also dealt with the fact that this valuesDB, I mean, you could imagine it can come from somewhere else. It may not have a thing that matches a particular index.
Right.
Index might also be a more complicated concept than just an int, right? But like, you know, the concept of like, hey, find me a thing at this location somewhere in this remote source that I have. Well, it may not exist, so we need to deal with that in some way.
Yep.
F-sharp optionals and dealing with those in pattern matching are a great way to do that.
Nice.
So the next step, we haven't done anything in values controller yet because we need to go into startup because this is where we need to actually wire up that interface.
Right. So now we're going into the configure services that's inside of our startup. And then that's where we're going to tap into the iService collection, right? We're going to add something to that the DI framework.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm going to have to open web values. What did I even name this thing? Oh, item service.
Item service.
I thought I named it value service. Huh. Well, naming, it's always fun.
Right.
So we'll go services.addTransient, mm-hmm. and we'll go iValueService. ValueService, there we go. And we're going to pipe this into ignore. So this is something that you notice you don't have to do in C sharp, but you have to do in F sharp, because configure services returns a unit, meaning nothing, but add transient returns an iService collection.
Yep.
In C sharp, that just gets implicitly discarded. Mm-hmm. But in F sharp, it doesn't, because we're very strict about the whole, hey, if you're calling a thing that returns a thing,
you want to do something
with it. You should do something with it. Now, if you literally want to do nothing with it, then you can put it into the ignore function. The ignore function just says, oh, you gave me a thing. Cool. Moving on.
Great. So
now that we've hooked that up in there, we now need to do the final thing where we'll go into the actual values controller. And we'll go service, I guess that's what I'm going to name it, open item service. And this will be iValues service. OK, so I now have an actual iValues service mm-hmm. that the DI framework is going to throw in here. And so in this case, we'll go let values equals service.getAllValues. And right here, we'll go let value is equal to service.getValue. And we're going to pass in this thing called ID as the index there. And you notice in the little hover tooltips, I can go to definition and stuff like that. Oh, nice. Just a nice, fun little thing that was contributed by one of our open source community members. So,
oh, nice.
Figured I'd call that out there. So let's just go ahead and run this real quick. So for people that have been following along, I mean, this is just kind of standard ASP.NET stuff. Like there was no crazy stuff that I had to do to get F sharp to be working with, you know, the way that it would work with C sharp. That's really the point, right? We want this to be something that people can use. So API values is value 1, value 2. It's what you would expect. I'll go 1. That'll give me that. We'll go 5,000. Oh no, looks like it's working.
Right.
So what you can imagine I could do is, you know, maybe this item service is actually a much more complicated unit. Well, I could create perhaps a different project, and then I could reference that project from here, and then just call into it there. And that project could be in an all F sharp project. Mm-hmm. And then I could write all of this stuff with like accessing a data source and maybe doing some logic on it. Like I could do that all in F sharp, but like I can opt into that because now that I have stuff wired up, like if I'm familiar with C sharp and object oriented programming with ASP.NET MVC, I can just do this and sort of say, okay, now I'm going to factor this out, get a bit more functional, and see where that goes from there. And that's kind of what I think the real value of this is for people, especially if they're trying to learn functional programming.
Right. You know, what I really love about that point that you made is, you know, I can have a solution, which essentially is a collection of projects, and I can have some of those projects might be F sharp, they might be, you know, C sharp, and I can kind of mix them all together to create my solution. So depending on what I want to do, I can pick the right language for the job.
Yeah, exactly. But speaking of picking the right language for the job, let's talk a little bit about some more stuff that we have, because it's not just about ASP.NET MVC. There is a cornucopia, if you will, of things that you can do with F sharp on .NET Core.
Okay.
So let's talk about Giraffe a little bit. So Giraffe, well, first of all, it's got a very different logo.
Okay.
That's a really cool logo. I love this logo. It's super cool. It's got like the little lambda and the shape of the giraffe and
nice.
Stuff. Yeah, that was really well put together. So this is kind of at its heart, I like to think of it as it's functional ASP.NET Core. So whereas ASP.NET Core MVC is ASP.NET Core MVC, but it's object-oriented ASP.NET Core. This is functional ASP.NET Core, so it's a little different. It's more lightweight. Whereas MVC is a framework, it's very opinionated in the way you have to do things, right? Like, I have to wire up DI if I want to use stuff. Like, I have to. This is much more of a library. It's a bit more lightweight. It feels a bit more low level when you're using it. That appeals to a certain crowd of people. And so that's what part of the reason why I love this is I'm actually one of those kinds of people. I like having like that real direct control over each and every little thing.
And I'm assuming with that too is you probably get a lot better performance maybe.
It depends on the workload. I think between MVC and Giraffe they're about the same overall.
Okay.
It might be a little. Honestly, I haven't looked at recent benchmarks, but I know that when they were benchmarked a couple like 6 or 7 months ago, they were basically the same in terms of perf, like modulo maybe a couple requests per second or something like that.
Got it.
So this uses what's known as Kleisli composition to define API routes. So few functional programmers out there, and specifically those who like category theory, I just said Kleisli composition. That's what this uses. I hope you're listening. Anyways, what this actually means for the rest of us is that it's a really convenient way to do stuff, and it uses fun little operators that look like arrows.
Okay.
And those arrows conceptually are like, oh, the thing on the left goes into the thing on the right. And it's actually, in my opinion, and very easy to learn, where you can learn the mathematical underpinnings later and just have some nice syntax to work with in the meantime. And so I think this one's recommended for people, like, if you already have functional programming experience, but or at least a little bit, and you're not familiar with .NET or .NET Core, or ASP.NET Core, or something like that, or maybe you are, but you've never really explored F-sharp before, then this is definitely a good one to try out because it's much more functional. And so I want to show you a little bit about what that means.
Cool, let's take a look at it.
Yeah, okay, so.
So I see you're already doing this one on a different OS, right? You're doing one now on your Mac.
Uh-huh. Right, of course I am. So if I wanted to get started with this, I already have the template installed. Mm-hmm. Giraffe.template. Yeah, something like that. You could just Google how to do it or something. But basically, you do .NET new dash I or dash dash install. And this will install a new template such that when you type .NET new, you'll be met with a thing called Giraffe Web App.
Okay.
And it'll say, OK, the short name is Giraffe, the language is F-sharp, and here are some tags. So I'll go .NET new giraffe-h. It'll show me some options. So there's a dash uppercase V for a view engine. There's a few things that it'll let me do. I can use just the defaults that it has. I can use Razor, which is actually ASP.NET MVC Razor page, like, well, not the Razor pages tech, but it's Razor templates actually thrown in there.
Yep.
And it basically builds a little basic UI. Or I can use .liquid, which is an open source alternative to that. Or I can go with none, where basically if I just want to have a web API.
Okay.
And that's what I'm going to use. And so there's like includes tests. There's this thing called use packet. Packet is an alternative dependency manager to NuGet. It's basically, it uses NuGet, like the back end, but it resolves packages a little differently. It has like a lock file that specifies all your dependencies that you check into source code and that sort of stuff.
Gotcha.
So like these are all options for you. You can play around with it in your spare time and, you know, check it out. But we'll go giraffe, .NET new giraffe dash v none. And let's put that into, we'll call that giraffe fun.
You gotta do a new, right? .NET new?
Yep. I am wonderful at typing on command. Okay.
It would be cool if they just had a .NET giraffe command. We should submit that out PR.
That would be cool. Okay, so there's SRC. Cool. Actually, yeah. Okay. Let's see if I open code. Will this give me what I want? Yes, it probably should here. All right, so it's done a design time build, so it's actually built the DLL and all that sort of stuff. You'll notice there's this packet.references file. This is this came from packet when it restored some packages. So there's a few things here, program.fs, models.fs, HTTP handler.fs. This models.fs, this is saying, hey, this is a type. It's a message, is what's called, and then it has a thing called text. And this is basically going to model what we want to put into the HTTP pipeline, like, as a response.
Okay.
So that you can have, like, an F-sharp type, in this case, a record type, that you can basically have a strongly typed representation of what you want the output to be, and then it'll understand how to handle that under the covers.
Okay. Let me ask you one thing about that then.
Yeah.
So I see there's a models file that's in there.
Mm-hmm.
So is this framework somewhat convention based? So do I have to put all my models in that models file?
Oh, no, you could put this in any file that you want.
Okay.
The main thing is that it's under a namespace, giraffefun.models. And so where it's actually used, you'll notice that we're opening the giraffefun.modules namespace. And so that's where there's this let response, and we have these little brackets right here. That's creating one of these models, an instance of it called response, and then it's taking that text there. So what I want to do very briefly is just walk through. There's a bunch of stuff right here that you can just kind of ignore. I mean, when you build a real Giraffe app, you'll have to learn this. But this is just wiring up to ASP.NET Core.
Sure.
It's actually doing stuff very similar to how ASP.NET MVC does it. It's basically just the goal of it is to take an error handler, in this case, like if there's an actual exception that's thrown, and give it a 500.
Yep.
And then this thing that they call web app, which is where your actual web API routes are going to live. Another thing that I want to call out here. So this is pretty fun. Notice how I click this tab. This is the Ionide tab. I'm actually using a plugin here called Ionide F-Sharp. This is kind of the official F-Sharp plugin for Visual Studio Code, it turns it into a full-fledged IDE. Like, you know, see there's this handle get hello function right there. I can just hit command and then click and it'll go to definition right in there. There's all sorts of really cool pieces of functionality this has. I really recommend people who are doing stuff with VS Code, like on the Mac or anywhere really, definitely check this out. It's a really great alternative to Visual Studio. So,
and is that particular just for web development with F-sharp or just F-sharp development in general?
This for anything. I personally use both. So I use this in Visual Studio.
Okay.
My main solution, well, it's the F-sharp solution itself. It's a really big one. That one's in Visual Studio. But anything that's like sort of like lightweight stuff, I always do it in VS Code first. And I do all of my F-sharp scripting in VS Code. So F-sharp has a scripting mode where you can create F-sharp script files, and then you can execute them in a thing called F-sharp Interactive, which is just an interactive REPL, basically.
Yeah.
And so I prefer VS Code for scripting, just because like scripting is more of like a lightweight sort of thing, and I like having a lightweight editor for that.
Sure, that makes sense.
Yeah, I reckon even if you're a heavy Visual Studio user, you should definitely check this out and use both. You may find that you like one for a particular task, and so I recommend people definitely do that. So let's explain a little bit about what this is doing.
Okay.
Because this is very different, especially if you're familiar with C# and OO. So we have a function. It's called WebApp. And WebApp's signature is given an HTTP func, which is an abstraction that lives inside of the actual the library itself, and given an ASP.NET core.http.httpContext, which is an ASP.NET core abstraction, produce an HTTP func result.
Yep.
Right. So this is basically, it's important to know the signature, but in terms of like how you actually write code that does this, like you know, new APIs, that sort of stuff, you don't really have to understand all of this, but it's definitely worth understanding that there's a particular signature here, because that's how you actually plug into things. So it's this thing called WebApp, and WebApp is comprised of a function called choose. And choose is comprised of, well, in this case, it's just an F-sharp list. Right? This whole thing right here is actually a list, and it's a list of two items. One is called a subroute, and subroute takes in, you know, slash API or, you know, whatever you want to call it. You can define routes underneath it.
Yep.
And then at the very bottom, it takes this thing called set status code. Set status code is a function that, you know, you say, okay, it's going to be 404. And then, you know, remember how I mentioned those arrows?
Yeah.
This is the Kleisli arrow.
Mm-hmm.
This is basically saying, okay, put the set status code 404, basically say, yeah, I want to compose this with a function that is called text. And text will take a thing saying not found, so that when there's like the equivalent of a 404 that would happen in ASP.NET Core, it'll just say not found as its response.
So that's a quick little helper in that will return just the text, but it'll send like, you know, it'll set the headers and the status codes and whatever else I need to have set.
Exactly.
Just using that little function that's there.
Exactly. And if you wanted to have it be more than just not found, you could actually plug in your own function right here.
Right.
Because text itself is just a thing that takes a string. It takes in a thing called next, which is an HTTP func, and it produces an HTTP context object, and then it produces an HTTP func text, an HTTP func result. So it takes a whole bunch of stuff, but basically this text has a particular signature.
Yep.
If you write a different function that has that same signature, you can plug that function into here, and then you can have a custom 404 handler.
Nice.
But so that model of there's a particular signature, I'm going to create a function that has that same signature and do something else with it. That's how you implement functionality with Giraffe. So we'll notice that inside of the subroute, subroute itself has a whole bunch of, like, there's these nested chooses going on right here. Like, there's a choose, and then this choose is comprised of this thing called get. Choose is basically a way of saying, well, you know, an incoming request is going to have a particular shape to it. Like, you know, it's /API/hello. Well, basically, this is basically the way of encoding, hey, if you find that route called hello, you know, call this handler.
Yeah.
If you don't find it, maybe it was something else, right? Maybe there was a different get. Maybe you defined your own route called hello XML, and you wanted to call handle get hello, but XML. Right. This doesn't exist right now, but like maybe that was the actual route. Sorry, slash. Well, right, this would basically walk through the choose, the sort of list, and say, okay, does it match this? No. Does it match this? Yes. Okay. And if it doesn't find it, then it just falls out to the next scope.
Gotcha.
And then once it can't find anything, it'll go, hey, you know, 404, not found. You gave me something I didn't understand. That's sort of the flow of this thing. So it's a little bit of alien syntax, but as you start to write it, it makes so much sense, right? So I have this handle get hello by XML. So if we go to handle get hello, we look at where that's defined in HTTP handlers.fs. Mm-hmm. So that's just a function right there. Well, let's create another function in here inside of a module called HTTP handlers, right? So go that right there. Note this uses. Interesting that they went with this decision to go with a lambda expression to define it. You don't actually have to do that. So we'll go HTTP func. That will define that as one of the input parameters, and then the other one will be a context. So that'll be HTTP context. Okay, so this is going to be our function here, and we're going to make it a task. This is actually a TPL task.
Yeah. Right?
Because under the covers, ASP.NET Core works with async await and mm-hmm. tasks and all that sort of stuff. This is just a nice syntax for being able to define that. So we'll go response, okay. And we'll define a new one of these. You can define it however you want. I'm going to use a slightly different syntax than what we had there. And we want it to be a text, right? Because if we look at the shape of response under models, this right here, it's a message, just has text right there. So
yep.
We'll do that. We'll go text equals hello world from giraffe, but in XML. Okay. And now we basically want to return out of this task. So basically this is a feature called computation expressions in F#.
Okay.
You can model a lot of complex stuff, but I won't really be getting into that. It's fundamentally a nice syntax for being able to write code that executes in a particular context.
Got it.
Right? Not just necessarily the main executing thread, but so this is a task-based context. So I need to do return to get out of that context. Or this thing called return bang, if that just depends on the signature, right? If I do return, that means I have a value that is of form task, like it actually has the task type. I just want to return that out. Mm-hmm. But if I have another value that I want to pass into another function that will then produce a task that I then want to have return out, then I can just do return bang. So you notice this is using return bang at the bottom. That's because JSON itself actually returns the thing that I need.
So that's kind of like almost F# way of handling continuations a little bit.
This is very similar to that. Yes.
Okay.
Instead of using the JSON function, I'll use the XML function because mm-hmm. this is a helper that Giraffe has there, and we'll just go XML response next. Context. And notice that XML, it has, you know, it needs a thing, and then it needs the next function, which we've already got right here.
Yeah.
And then it needs the context, which we already have right here. We just pass that in. And now that compiles. So you'll notice right here, I don't have the red squigglies anymore. I can go to definition, go right there, because this is just awesome editor tooling, which is just at its heart what F# is all about,
yeah.
in addition to being a cool functional programming language. So we'll go .NET watch run. I probably should have done that from the beginning so that I could show it executing both in the modify, but you know, whatever.
That's fine.
Okay, cool. So this is going to be on localhost 5000. Right, okay. Localhost 5000. There we go. Not found because I didn't specify error.
Yep.
So we know the error handler works there. We'll go API hello. And now I have some JSON, which is kind of nice. Nice. Hello world from giraffe. Hello, what do we name this? We named it hello XML. Hello XML.
Hello XML.
Okay. XML. There we go. Hello world from giraffe, but an XML.
Nice. That's
so what's really interesting about this is if I wanted to add a new route, it's just, you just go here, you go route.
Specify the route and just add a function.
Hey there, yeah. And that's kind of what functional programming is all about, right?
Yeah.
Just if you want a new capability, just add a new function and just compose that function with whatever the thing is you're building.
Right.
And so it's that easy. And because it's just a function, I can do anything I want in here. I could do I could execute some business logic, I could do a complex computation, I could hit a database, I could do anything, it doesn't matter. Because all I need to do is make sure that it fits this particular signature, that it's a function, it's task-based, it's got a next function, it's got an HTTP context, and everything inside the body of this, like however I fill out this response, doesn't matter. And so that's why it's so easy to make web APIs like this, because it's super flexible.
Right.
So I really love Giraffe and that flexible model. You know how I mentioned Suave kind of came before Giraffe. This is kind of where it truly borrowed from Suave, because Suave sort of pioneered this, not just the syntax. Like, you know, they didn't just pioneer the fact that there's this thing called get, this Clicy combinator, this choose function. Like, if you write Suave code, it looks similar to this as well. Cool. But this entire model of just, hey, I have a function, it's a really beautiful abstraction.
So. Nice.
Anyways, that's kind of the heart of Giraffe programming. And you can do both JSON and XML if you want.
Cool. That looks pretty good. So I know we're running really low on time. So one thing I wanted to ask you about. Mm-hmm. So if I want to get started with using Giraffe or even just web programming in general with F#, like what are some of the places you think I could go to get some of that information?
Oh, absolutely. So if you already have .NET Core installed in your machine, then you already have sort of what you need. Which is good. But search engines have a lot of information. Like if you just type in F# Giraffe, for example, like you'll end up like on a GitHub page that'll have everything you need. There's same thing with Saturn, Suave, Freya, all that sort of stuff.
Yep.
They all have excellent get started guides. I recommend that everybody check out all of them, not just one particular one, just because there's each has a particular thing that may speak to you personally as a developer. We're also going to be adding some documentation for this in our official docs. So if you just look for the F# docs, we're going to add that too. We just finished up a few other things there, so that hasn't made its way in there yet.
Nice, pretty cool. And then again, regardless of whether I'm using Visual Studio or Visual Studio Code, whether I'm Windows or I'm on Mac or Linux, I could still get these templates, I can run them on my machine, and I could start web development with F#.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool, awesome. Well, hey, thank you so much for being on the show, man. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
We just learned all about creating web applications with F# on this episode of the On.NET Show.